welcome to another episode, another thrilling episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies.
Don't put that kind of pressure on
us. Which I think I'm going to rename to Talking Pictures Podcast. That's what I think I'm going to do. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Bregoli.
Hi.
Bill McCuddy.
That's me.
And special guest this week from Showbiz Cafe, showbizcafe.com and Showbiz Cafe, my friend Jack Rico is here.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff. The new Alien movie, Alien Covenant, and we've got interviews with...
With Danny McBride and the lovely Ms. Catherine Waterston.
There you go. Danny McBride. What's your favorite
Danny McBride movie,
Bill?
I cannot stand Danny McBride. I will go on record. I think he's a big load. I've never seen Pineapple Express, all of that stuff, including that HBO show that everybody loved.
Don't you guys appreciate someone who curses very well? No one curses better than Danny McBride.
Fuck him, then, is what I say.
Wow.
I don't get him. He's like a load.
In this movie, he's sort of the Slim Pickens character.
Right. No,
Bill will be talking about one of our on-demand picks called Hounds of Love.
Hounds of Love.
That he likes.
A creepy Australian thriller.
I'm going to be talking about the second season of the new Aziz Ansari show, Master of None. And we're going to tell you about some... all these independent on-demand movies some are theatrically released, some you could find on demand, that are either on demand right now.
We also have the Cannes Film Festival going on over in France, but right here in New York, we have the Upfront.
That's what we're going to start talking about, is the Upfront. So let me just begin by telling you, for all those people who are listening and want an update on the Talking Pictures television show and where it's at, as I've said the last few weeks...
We're going to be upfront with you.
Yeah, I'm going to be. Yes, exactly. I've been very busy at the upfronts, where all the networks gather and all the talent agencies and all the talent trying to get the show on.
And
the
they
air.
All say universally to Neil Rosen, "Who the hell are you? What the what?
No, they all know
what is
who
this?
I am. You know what I mean? It's interesting. So anyway, you've been to the upfronts, Jack.
Yes.
Which presentations did you go to?
Well, we should tell people very quickly what they are.
Why don't you do that?
The advertisers gather every year and they get shown a sizzle reel and the stars come out, and it's really like a little dog and pony show.
They
and
present it's kind their of, it's, programming slate for the year to be able to sell to advertise so they can fund these shows with millions and millions of dollars.
And it's kind of an archaic system. It's kind of like the junket system. It's been going on since. It's one of those things that you'd go, they still do that? But they
do.
And they do it in New York. They basically take New York over, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center. Radio City Music Hall. And they have these elaborate presentations.
They're worth $2 million and up, just these upfronts alone.
This is where Johnny Carson dropped the bombshell that he was not coming back to the show. He came out at Carnegie Hall, I think it was, and said, this is my retirement year, and like everybody was like, what?
That's right.
And so sometimes news happens.
Television
here.
Has changed so drastically over the last few years with all the streaming services like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, YouTube, and shows are debuting at all different times during the year. Mm-hmm. That this whole idea of first of all, the fall preview, I remember when I was a kid, there would be like, the new season has begun in the fall, and you'd get that TV guide, which was parodied in the Seinfeld episode where George Costanza's father was collecting the TV guides. He goes, but the fall preview issues, those are the ones that are really...
like a little phone book.
Right. So, I just remember that the fall season was like the big deal. Most shows back in the day, if they were picked up, they would get a 39 or a 23-week commitment, and even if the show was dying in the ratings, that show would remain on the air. And, shows like Seinfeld, actually, which were doing terribly in the ratings the first few years, or Cheers, which was like probably one of the greatest sitcoms in the history of television, was dead last in the ratings for the first couple of years that it was on the air. But, a couple of executives liked it, championed the show, they stuck with it, and then you know what happens to Cheers. It becomes a top-rated show on NBC. It becomes must-see TV Thursday. So...
appointment television.
Right. So when you... And by the way, NBC
Warren Littlefield,
is now
I think,
trying to build another must-see TV Thursday. They're putting their big hit, This Is Us, on Thursday.
Well, no.
Wait.
No.
This just
remember,
in.
This Is Us is a drama... and they're trying to do must-see TV as comedy.
No, no. For but that Thursday, if you remember must-see TV on Thursday, they had all comedies, like going back to Cosby,
Seinfeld, and Friends,
the Family right. Ties, Cosby, Friends, right. Seinfeld, Cheers, all of that stuff. But the 10 to 11 o'clock hour was always
yes.
a drama.
Okay, all right.
Be it
all
L.A.
Right.
Law, be it
L.A. Law,
E.R.
Law,
you know, be it what was the one with Howie Mandel and Denzel Washington?
St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere. Right. So the 10 o'clock hour was always the one hour. You'd have the 2 hours of comedy.
That's your drama. Right.
So
right.
I'm
right.
thinking This Is Us is going to be their 10
yes,
to 11 o'clock
absolutely.
Thing. And then you'll have comedies mm-hmm. filling in that
first. Will and Grace returning?
Will and Grace. Right. Rosanna here is returning.
On ABC.
Rosanna's yeah. returning on ABC.
Yeah. In some kind of a hot new concept. Did they explain that?
Well, they all die at the end of, at the season finale of Roseanne, if you watch the show. Everybody's
oh, I didn't realize
dead,
that.
I don't remember that.
And she looks back, and that the whole.
You sure, just, was it a dream? The last
no,
episode?
Yeah, like
last
Pam Ewing in the shower.
I believe the last episode of Roseanne. She was the whole. excuse me. My voice is shot.
You know, he's verklempt. He's a little upset by Roseanne being dead.
No, it was like
you're the one.
I believe that the whole, all the seasons of Roseanne were just her reflecting back on the family. Like John Goodman was dead, and you know.
Well, I don't know what the premise of this reunion show is, but
even, if you
Howard Stern was
family,
talking about
probably
Stern just, was talking today about how much he liked the idea of it coming back and what the concept.
Here's what I like
of.
About the idea is that you're getting a group of, I guess. Middle Americans, right? White middle Americans, they're now shoved into the Trump era. And so what we're going to see on broadcast television is the points of views of these middle white Americans talking to the rest of America of how they feel about Trump. Now,
so you think the Connors? You think the Connors were pro-Trump? You think they're going to come back and be like?
They could. They could be. And we don't know. The thing is that the country's changed so much since the last time the show was on air that it'd be interesting to see what their social points of views are today. And
yeah,
I think that's one.
I remember them being kind of liberal for middle American, like.
Yeah, but maybe they got sick of it. Maybe they hate Obamacare. You know?
No, I wasn't. And I also wonder is Trump even going to be around long enough for the show here?
That's what
true.
I was thinking.
The dude's
Jack
bulletproof
that.
Right now, man, unfortunately.
Not according to Michael Moore, who announced with Harvey Weinstein at Cannes this week that they're going to do a
11-9?
Fahrenheit 11-9, which yeah. is going to be a Trump-trashing movie. And, you know, somebody made an interesting point online. They said, how is this going to be new from anything else that's been said about Trump in a variety of different places? When Michael Moore came out with Fahrenheit 9-1-1 that many years ago, what was 97? That there wasn't the internet to the extent that there is now. There wasn't the news from all sorts of different places, and Fahrenheit 9-1-1 was like enlightening. Yeah. This is going to be a rehash, I think. But Weinstein and Moore are excited about it. Moore is also working on a, which I'm trying to get a little piece part in, an anti-Trump Broadway show. Which
really?
Is, going to launch this summer. So that should be fun. Hopefully.
Yeah, they've been exploring a couple of things. Off-Broadway had something with the Clintons recently. And there's something called Building the Wall that they're also doing on Off-Broadway.
Building
so there,
the wall.
There's enough there. But
and Mexico is
let me,
going
let me give you a quick rundown of what everybody's been doing so far. NBC, ABC, and Hulu. Hulu was interesting. There's part of the upfront.
So Hulu had an upfront by themselves?
Yeah, it's called
well,
the
they are
new
creating
fronts.
Original. They are creating original programs.
They are, but they don't go out seeking advertising dollars the way everybody else does.
Now they're doing it.
So tell us about their upfronts.
Right.
Yeah.
So as part of the upfronts, and Bill had talked about how it's basically an arcane model at this point, but the now with all the digital streamings that you said, Neil, there's something called the new fronts, and that's where all these live digital streaming platforms fit in. So People Magazine, Time Inc., does a digital new front, etc. One of them was Hulu's, and they just promoted J.J. Abrams and Stephen King are doing Castle Rock, which is inspired on one of his books. Also, Alec Baldwin's part of the Looming Tower. Marvel partnered up with Hulu, which is a big deal. And they're calling this one called Runaways, which is a cult hit amongst with teens. ABC's doing Roseanne, American Idol, also another Marvel partnership called Inhumans, doing The Little Mermaid live. And I think that's where now they're going to start going. Disney's going to lend a lot of their animated properties.
Opening the vault and letting it be.
And instead of doing the live-action movie, they're going to do the live-action musicals on ABC because it's worked so well for NBC.
But does that have the life, or does that make as much money? Can that as...
Well, it's family-friendly, so advertisers will love it.
All of those Disney live stage things have been done. They're like Lion King's on Broadway, Beauty and the Beast had a successful run.
But not live on television, which creates a spectacle, an event for that particular night.
The way they did The Sound of Music live or Grease.
But it feels like this year they're going back to that trough too many times. We're going to have Jesus Christ Superstar. We're going to have...
That's right. Is that true?
Yeah. Is that true? I love the way you just like you woke up whenever you come to this podcast.
I did not know that. That is weird wild.
I think you can go to this live trough one too many times.
Fox, and that was a hit too.
Right. But I mean, it was more of an event they did it once every couple of years.
They did Hairspray.
And all these worked out well. So they're doing a live Rolling Stone 50 musical tribute.
Right.
So a lot of those are usually specials on CBS, but now they're removing the special out of it and they're kind of just creating the live tribute, which should be interesting. And then Scandal's reporting that they're going to do the last season. So that's also a big deal coming out of the ABC upfront. For NBC, Will and Grace return after a decade. They're doing a special 12-episode season.
Are they living together in an old people's home?
No, they're living in the same apartment.
Well, it's rent controlled.
Yeah.
At least that's probably believable. Because if you get a decent price on a place to live.
Megan Mullally, who I saw on the Colbert show the other night, she's doing a show with her husband, Nick Offerman. Totally independent of that, where they're examining their marriage because they've been married.
This particular Will and Grace thing has just like an 8-story order or something.
12.
Okay, so because something that's coming back, I think the Roseanne thing is only 8.
Why? Why are they limited? I mean, if they're going to come back,
you know,
and do this,
because they don't know if they have the lifetime span to sustain 4, 5, 6 seasons.
Also, scheduling. If you're John Goodman and you're turning down movies to be in, I can't speak for the rest of the cast. But it's a time suck to do a TV show.
That's right, and all these people are working. I know that.
Eric McCormick.
They're all doing Broadway, too. By the way, A Few Good Men. They're doing a live Broadway adaptation for NBC. That should be really interesting to see.
Wow. I can't handle that.
I saw the original.
The
original
on Broadway.
On Broadway.
And so that should be interesting. Jesus Christ Superstar, as Bill
Hulu
said.
Before we move off from this, what is Hulu's up from? Telling. What are they coming out?
Runaways, Castle Rock with J.J. Abrams and Stephen King, The Looming Tower with Alec Baldwin. Those are the highlights of what they're doing. And they came up with a brand new live TV streaming service that's $39.99. So if you're looking to cut the cord because cable's just too expensive, this is the best of both worlds. Imagine,
will they have any major network besides NBC?
Yeah, they have basically all of them. They have CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, and TNT.
Well, this could be horrible for Spectrum. I feel awful for cable companies. This could really put the nail in their coffin.
Bergola, do you watch much of this streaming stuff? I mean, do you watch much of this?
I actually watch a lot of Netflix.
You watch a lot of Netflix.
And mostly British television.
So imagine if Netflix had a live TV, 50 channels you can watch live, all of them. The sports, the news, and the five big broadcasts.
I wouldn't be that interested in it.
So would Netflix be producing
your own news? You pay an extra $39.
I still wouldn't do that.
So would Netflix be producing their own newscast?
Well, it's not Netflix. This would be Hulu.
So would Hulu be creating?
No, because it's basically just taking the live
CNN and feed or like
yeah. So if CBS has a newscast, then that's broadcast through Hulu. It's the channel live, but via Hulu. So you can cut your Spectrum cord, not pay the $80 that you pay or whatever.
$200, thank you.
$200.
But you still need that.
I got the bundle.
You still need that internet thing.
Yeah, so you'd have to have internet. But remember, Bill's paying $200 for his cable, right?
So am I.
So it's $40, $39.99 for 50 channels, plus you get everything that Hulu offers in its original programming, plus its movies, which is a library of 3,500.
What's your take on this end?
I cut the cord already. I got the...
No, I can tell you're getting spiffed. What are they paying you?
No, nothing.
Okay, so...
Nothing, not at all. No, it's just a great...
Let me ask you about streaming... Let me ask you about the... about
neutrality.
The importance of something dropping on streaming. Does anybody go, that day at that time, this is happening on...
Yes.
Really,
yes.
They do?
House of Cards.
Which brings me...
Because when I think of streaming, I think, boy, I can watch this anytime. Okay. I don't have to be...
I watched the first
tube
season.
Side.
To answer that question, I watched the first season last year. of Master of None, which is the Aziz Ansari.
I keep on thinking you're going to say masturbation or masturbate.
No, 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 Master of None, which is also a Peggy Lee song, which is like, what's the lyric? Oh, well, it'll come to me. Jack of all trades, Master of None. I can pull it up. We can play this song. So here's the thing. Like with Love, the Judd Apatow show, which he kept tweeting out, 3 more hours and Love's coming on the system. You know, like at midnight, at that particular time, fans of the show can start binge watching the show. So I loved the first season of Master of None. It was all about this relationship he was having with this girl that he met randomly, and it was about their really kind of dysfunctional relationship, and then they start living together and it becomes more functionable, and at the end of that season
his family's involved too, his mother and father,
they go separate ways. And I was waiting for, like, you know, whatever day it came on this past week. Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch it at midnight, but that next night I'm like, great, it's on the system. So yes, people are waiting that are their fans of the show. I will tell
you. But you didn't watch it at midnight that night. That's my whole point. It's like there's no such thing as appointment television with Hulu.
If I was up at midnight and had nothing to do, I would have started watching Master of None. I am a little disappointed. I'm halfway through the second season. It's not relationship based. It's food based.
Yeah, they're in Italy. Well, I told you my friend works on the show.
Only the first two episodes, but it's all about food. That's a central component to the show. He left to go to Italy at the end of the first season to learn how to make pasta, and everything is about eating in great restaurants. And he gets back to New York, and it's all about.
Why is that interesting?
It's not.
And how?
So it's not like the trip. It's not like the thing with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon.
Trip of Italy,
Having watched the first half of the season, it's too food-based for me. Maybe there's hints that there's going to be some kind of romance with some woman who came over from Italy. I haven't gotten that far yet. But the first five episodes, the first one was very good. It was in shot in black and white. Aziz Ansari directed it, and it was a parody of the Bicycle Thief, the movie Bicycle Thief.
Oh, wow.
Clever.
Vittorio De Sica.
Right.
Uh-huh. And it was somebody stole his cell phone, and he'd gotten this number of this girl, and he's with this little kid, and they're like looking around to find the guy who stole the cell phone. That was very ingenious.
That's Leonardo DiCaprio's favorite movie, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah, The Bicycle Thief.
Well, I hope it becomes less food-based, but it's just...
So you've watched how many at this point?
There's 10. I've watched 5. And everything's about food. Let's go to this restaurant. Let's order this. Look at this.
If you were Aziz and you could get a company to pay for you to do something in your second season, I think it would
so
be going
far,
to Italy.
I have a stomach ache just listening to this episode premise.
Listen to that.
That's Aziz outside, pissed off that we're talking about it.
New York City.
Yeah.
Bill, let's talk about Alien Covenant.
Oh, we're going to talk about a movie?
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about a movie. Well, there's this giant ship. And it's full of sleepy people because they've all been put in cryo sleep, and there's a crew.
It sounds like that.
Let's set something up right away. So it's not really, it's a prequel to the original Alien.
That's right.
But it's also a side, it happens, sorry, that's my
It takes place somewhat after Prometheus.
So you really should have seen the original Aliens and Prometheus to really get everything that's going on in this.
Prometheus would help because there are two Michael Fassbender characters in this movie.
So you understood Prometheus?
I actually sort of did. I didn't really.
You're one of the two people. Rico likes Prometheus, right?
Michael Fassbender was in Prometheus.
Well, then
except
like
towards
this.
The end where it got very gaudy and just ostentatious. Well, it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, the end for me that started about 10 minutes in, I didn't understand. So I didn't get Prometheus at all. But you're saying
this
as a standalone?
To understand
this takes
Prometheus.
Place before the original Alien.
That's right.
But Ripley, Sigourney Weaver.
She hasn't been born yet.
Okay, she hasn't been born yet.
That's right.
And
believe it or not, Ripley's not in
there. Believe it or not.
And believe it or not, I'm walking on air.
I'm walking on air.
I never thought I'd feel so
free.
All right. So, anyways, a giant ship full of sleeping people.
I would say, but we digress, but it's so obvious.
They're going to colonize a planet, but there's this blast that wakes up the crew and kills a few members of the crew, including Catherine Waddeston's husband. The interesting thing about this crew is that they're all couples.
Oh. So it's like a Noah's Ark, or I mean, it's like a...
Yeah, well, they're not there to colonize the planet, but they're carrying people who are. They're all still asleep.
Did you enjoy it, Bill?
Oh, yeah, it was fun. It ramps up slowly. It takes 45 minutes before anything bursts out of everybody's chests.
Okay, so it's a slow crescendo.
It's a slow crescendo, and then
building tension and suspense.
The ending was a little predictable. It was interesting in that Michael Fassbender really does carry his character is more of the creature monster that you have to look out for than the monster itself.
Can I be honest with you? I saw Prometheus, and I love Fassbender in that film. And from the little that I saw in terms of clips on Alien Covenant, Fassbender's excellent. I think they should spin off some sort of movie with him as lead.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I have never been so divided on a film just going online or listening to people. A couple of people I trust say they cannot stand this film. And
so
a couple of people have said it's really, really good. Yeah, and Ridley Scott is in fine form.
Yeah, I'm on the really good. More like pretty good.
So what was the conversation like with these big stars, including Danny McBride,
McBride explained why the alien movies scare us so.
The same way that Jaws, you know, terrified everyone about being in the ocean, definitely Alien has terrified everyone about having a foreign parasite in your stomach that could rip out at any moment. That's horrifying to think about, that someone using you as a nest. Yeah, it's terrifying to think about.
He's funny, that Danny McBride.
And then Catherine Waterston.
with a bad haircut, in my opinion.
That's right. Well, she explained that the reason the haircut is that she made this right after she made Fantastic Beasts. And for that, her head was pretty much shaved for the wig that she wore. So this is kind of like her hair growing out, and they didn't want to cut it all off again. So she just said, let's go with this weird mop that kind of grew after her head being shaved. So that's what that's the expression for this. But, it's not exactly flattering. But she was asked if the cast was thinking about the original cast of Alien while they were making this.
All of the actors in the film, we talked about that film and how brilliant those performances were, so it could have been very intimidating, but really just made us all feel really welcome and safe and free to create our own story.
So how do you think this will do? And is this going to just continue like Star Trek, where they're going to just
make... Yeah, how are they selling this movie?
15
more of
these
things? Is it a Ridley Scott extravaganza?
Right.
I mean, you know...
Because
I really
Alien
don't feel
another
excited
Alien movie.
About this. Well, I feel like it's like
next week we have a Pirates movie and a Baywatch. So it'll be the
Ridley Scott movie I'm looking forward
to.
You
hear about
in here anytime.
Sorry,
it's Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blade Runner 2049. I'll repeat it three times for you, so you get it. Okay. Write it down. By the way, we're not playing the same drinking game we played last week. We'll have a new one at the end of this.
You guys played a drinking game?
Well, it was every time Neil didn't hear what I said, take a drink, and then you'll be really drunk by the end of
it. How wasted were you by the end, Neil?
We didn't drink.
We didn't drink. No, we were...
tweeted it out.
After that.
Are you drinking LaCroix?
Yeah, we're LaCroix.
By the way, tweet us at Neil Rose and Apples at...
At Bill McCuddy.
Bill Bergoglio does not have a Twitter account, but Jack...
You can reach me at Jack Rico Official on Twitter.
And Jack Rico.
Because there's so many unofficial Jack.
Well, no, there's a couple of Jack Ricos. I don't know who these imposters are, but I have to put in an official there, and it's verified.
Blue check mark?
Yeah. Do you have it?
The blue check mark?
Yeah.
No, do you have the blue
check mark? It's called verification,
Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
How do you get the blue check mark on Twitter?
Okay, so I was like, how come I haven't been... I mean, I have about 21,000 followers, and I'm thinking, how come I'm not verified? So then I went
Welcome
online.
Welcome to Tech for Dummies.
Basically, you can request to be verified, but you have to kind of show proof that you're worthy of verification. So
you have to verify your verify?
Yes. And I sent it in about 2 days. I got verified.
So you just write Twitter and...
Yeah, there's a request page on Twitter.
Your Twitter.
There's a request page on Twitter, and basically saying, I'm in the media business, this is who I am, these are the links, this is the show I have. And then 2 days later, they'll send you a verification.
You know,
it's like the Broadcast Film Critics Association, where every year you have to justify your existence.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, Pirates of the Caribbean, I don't know if you know about this, is...
I know that Paul McCartney sold out and is in it.
Is he?
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it does make sense because they had Keith Richards.
I know.
There's a bribery case that's going on right now where I heard this on the news last night.
Hackers.
Right. These hackers have obtained a copy of Pirates of the Caribbean, and they are demanding all this money from Disney, or they're going to just put it out on the internet.
So this is what they did with Sony. And James,
why can't
Franco
someone hack this? Why can't we be hacked? Why can't they threaten us to take this away and
the podcast
broadcast it to everyone?
And
if you're listening out there and you're
Disney
a hacker,
saying,
please.
No way we're bowing to the demands of hackers and terrorists, but we'll see what happens.
Government? Some government, or some big official, or some company came out and said, "Pay it." Did you see that?
I did read that somewhere.
Somebody said to the hospitals who are turning patients away and saying with rescheduling,
the only way
operations
only
and stuff.
They wanted.
They're what?
They only wanted $300.
They're very low tech. Yeah. Very cheap. Jeez. I guess they're obviously just trying to make a point.
Yeah,
obviously.
Next time they'll ask for $400.
And Bill saw a, which we do here, which we did on the TV show, and now we're gonna do many times on the podcast. A undiscovered hidden gem on demand that you saw that you
yeah played. I really like this movie a lot. It's called Hounds of Love. It's about a couple that cruises the suburbs of Perth, Australia in the 70s or 80s, and it's loosely based on a true story. They abduct young girls, in this case a 16-year-old, take them home, chain them up, and do unspeakable things to them. The girl that they kidnap in the film catches on to what's going on very quickly and tries to get inside the head of the woman in order to get her freedom, because she realizes she's not being kidnapped, that they do this once a week, and by Monday they're going to kill her. That's just what they do. And
so they're nutty serial killers.
Yeah, but they're very, very ordinary looking plain Jane couple that you would never.
Bill, Hounds of Love sounds like a romantic comedy.
It's not a, it's
on
not
NBC.
A, or an Elvis Presley movie. It's not. It's like it's dark and cool, and the actress, the acting in it is amazing, but the young girl who's abducted is really,
who's in
really
the show?
Good. It's
it?
All Australian unknown actors, and it was shot
it
down
sounds
there.
Like two other movies. One in particular that we did a few months ago on the TV show Talking Pictures. It was this black and white movie about this girl whose father gets killed,
right.
And then she starts
My chaining, Mother's Eyes, was that
she
called?
Starts chaining, I don't remember. She starts chaining people up
yeah.
in the basement.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
was a horror film.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it also sounds like this horrendous, but I love it. It's so bad, it's great. I saw it once on Channel 7 in New York, like years ago, like on a Sunday night at like 1 in the morning. Daryl Hannah gets chained up in the basement, and this other couple that can't have a baby tries to impregnate her, and they succeed.
So they're using her as a surrogate mother?
Yes, and then they march her around their backyard in chains, which is awful. it's the worst thing, but yet the best thing, because it's
the
just so hard.
That's the Handmaid's Tale. Thank you. I'm here all week.
There you go.
You know, we were chatting about, and I'm a little behind the eight ball, not knowing what's going on with this. We were talking before we started recording this about something that's going on with Steve Harvey, and you guys were gonna, and we said save it for the podcast. What did he do exactly?
Well, some memo got leaked. We're talking about hacked
Well, I'll
just get the ball rolling. Steve Harvey is moving his show from Chicago.
Which one? He has nine shows.
The Steve Harvey show.
The talk show.
Yeah, the talk
not
show.
The one with the little
based in Chicago, moving to Los Angeles, not taking everybody with him. You know, the show's very successful, getting a new distributor, so obviously they're going to have some new faces behind the scenes. But Steve put out a memo to his staff basically saying, in no uncertain terms, stop talking to me. Stop stopping me in the hall. Stop asking me for shit. When I'm getting makeup in my makeup chair, don't come up and ask me things. If
don't
my
wait
door
for me
is
in the
closed,
hallway.
Don't wait for me outside
me.
Of my office.
Talk
make an
about
appointment.
Whether or not they were going to be going.
Neil,
with him
he was so specific on the moments that you should not bother him, and he made a list of like 10 things. I thought it was a joke at first
yeah.
because he's a comedian. So
he
I'm thinking
comedian.
This was a joke, but this was
no.
not a joke
and
at
he,
all.
And he, when it leaked, he said, well, maybe I was a little blunt, but I believe everything I said, and I'm not sorry for it. You know, the first thing I thought of was if this had been had, if this were true on the Larry Sanders show, there'd be no show. Because the whole Larry Sanders show was everybody coming up to him after the show
but
and talking to him and relating
like,
to him off camera and stuff. And this is, he just wants his personal life back, he says. He's been way too inundated with people.
So basically, these people are worried that they're going to lose their jobs and might not be going with him to Los Angeles.
No, that's not even it.
Oh,
no,
so I'm thinking that it would be very normal for people to come up to him and say, hey, you know, Steve, you had a moment.
Well, in fact, that could be part of it.
Is that the crux of it, or is that just a little piece of it?
No, I think it's just kind of like
I'm a prima donna.
He's this nice guy on camera who's not a nice guy off camera.
I wouldn't say that, okay? So you got, all of us have been in TV for a long time. You know, we've been approached by people that sometimes we don't know, maybe junior staff or something like that, asking us for, hey, can you get my brother in? Can you help me out here? And I think that probably his staff, in his defense, probably abused the privilege of knowing Steve Harvey and tried to get way too much out of him, and it exhausted him to the point that he had to make this list.
Well, that's what comes through in these stories, but it still is like...
So he's getting a lot of bad press.
Kind of a shitty memo.
Yeah. And I think when you really look at it, he could have approached it in a whole different manner. There was a second article, I think, in the Hollywood Reporter where they asked a human resource person to come in and kind of rewrite the Steve Harvey memo.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't see that.
It was hilarious.
That.
And so...
do you think this will... First of all, how many shows does he have? He has Family Feud. He has the show with the little kids.
Yeah. He has the Miss Universe.
He has Miss Universe.
Which a lot of those are shot in Atlanta.
He has the Steve Harvey talk show.
The radio show.
Before he had all these other shows, he brought the show Family Feud down to Orlando, I think, or because he was living down there or something. But that's a lot of shows for anybody to do. I'm not defending this memo. I haven't read the memo. But do you think this will hurt him, or do you think this will blow over, Bill?
It'll probably blow over. Nope. I don't know. I've worked at the CBS Broadcast Center, and you can't help but run into on-air talent like Scott Pelley. Years ago, Dan Rather would wander the hallway, and at one point he actually butted into a conversation I was having with somebody.
Not now, Dan.
Dan was one of the cooler people to run into in the hallway.
Rather not.
But, how's Scott Pelley?
Scott's okay. He says hi, but a while ago he got a memo telling him to behave and to be nice to people. So I'm wondering if this is part of it. Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
Everybody at Fox News was nice to everybody, except Greta Van Susteren was kind of a bitch. But
here's my Steve Harvey story.
That was her persona. Neil has a Steve Harvey story.
I interviewed Steve Harvey back before he had any of these shows, and most people didn't know who he was. For a movie called The Original Kings of Comedy.
Oh, okay. I remember that.
Which was basically a compilation of different stand-ups doing their act. D.L. Ugly was in it. Cedric the Entertainer was in it.
I remember that.
And Spike Lee directed
that's correct. And also the late
Bernie Mac
was in it.
I got a story about Bernie
Mac. Return of the Mac.
Now, most of these four comedians were not that known at the time that this movie came out. And they did The Junket, and Spike did The Junket too. And I interviewed D.L. Ugly, and I said, you know, you're doing comedy and blah, 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 and where do you want this to go? You know, this is a really great showcase for you. And he said to me, and I'll never forget this, he said, all is just ka-ching. That's what he said, was ka-ching. And I said, ka-ching. And he goes, I'm not doing anything for anybody unless I'm making a lot of money. So it was just, you know, this was on camera. This wasn't like an off-camera.
Was this D.L. Hughley?
You said Hughley.
No,
you said D.L. Hughley.
You said D.L. Hughley.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No, it was not D.L. Hughley. It was Steve Harvey. Uh-huh. My apologies to D.L. Hughley. No, so that's what I said. I asked Steve Harvey, and he said, he wasn't being mean about it. I mean, he just said,
he's a blunt guy.
Don't want to do anything unless they're paying me money. I'm looking to make money, a lot of money, you know? So then I saw an interview with him about a year or so ago. Right when he screwed up the Miss Universe pageant thing. Was it Miss Universe, Miss America, Miss USA? Which one was it?
Miss Universe.
It was Miss Universe,
right,
yeah,
and he was talking about the fact that fame has gotten to him. He just can't stand that. Like, if he had to do it all over again, he would have picked another profession because he doesn't like being this famous. So I don't know. This was one of those Access Hollywood interviews.
I did that same junket for the Original Kings of Comedy, and I did a roundtable with Bernie Mac. And I was the only white person at the round table. And Bernie Mac looked at me and then looked at everybody else and then looked back at me and said, this gentleman obviously fits right in. And then he extended his hand, shook my hand, said, thank you for covering this. And he was really sweet.
You know, back to your question, Neil, is this going to affect the Steve Harvey show moving forward?
Well, it's the Steve Harvey, like, universe. I mean, he's got so many projects.
It's going to be called Steve. The executive producer of VH1's Big Morning Buzz, who is now going out with Gianna, the...
Oh,
the female on the Food Network. She's a superstar. Yeah,
no, De Laurentiis.
De Laurentiis.
Gianna De Laurentiis.
Right.
He's now, they're going out together, and he just landed this job. Huh? So.
Nicole Kidman hates her, by the way.
Really?
Did you see what happened on Ellen the other day?
No, what happened?
She spit the food out that Gianna, are we saying?
No.
De Laurentiis made, yeah.
Get out of
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
How
in
did
front
that
of Ellen.
Up?
Ellen tastes it and goes, oh, this is delicious. And
Nicole
tastes it and goes, it's a little dry. And then Gianna goes, it's been out here for 5 hours. We prepped it 5 hours ago. She goes, and she's chewing it and she goes, well, don't show the children this. And right on camera, she spits it into her hand. Yeah, the big kerfluffle.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry,
so
we
Shane
digress.
Shane Farley is the executive producer of the show, and I was just feeling bad for him. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, as long as the show is a great show that Steve needs the lack of, I guess, personal contact, human contact, in order to put out a great show, I think no one's going to care.
Because, I don't know. He's
you
Mr.
know, fame and
he's
success
Mr. Personable.
Down to everybody,
his whole. It's not. We're not talking about Dan Rather. We're not talking about.
We surveyed 100 people. Top five right. answers are on the board. Name a Steve Harvey show currently on the air.
Well, I just
he
think
be a jerk.
I just think he's,
the show's good.
His whole personality is built on with the little kids and stuff. Just being a nice guy in this
world.
Do
you watch any of this stuff, Bill? Any of Steve Harvey shows? Do you watch Family Feud? Seriously?
Only if I'm in passing. If somebody else has
poor
it
Bill
on.
Is like the uncle at the dinner party that we keep turning to and going, what do you think Uncle Bill?
I interviewed him once. That was a phone interview, and I passed along a compliment saying that my dad had said that he was the best dressed man in television, and he said, your father is absolutely right.
He has a line of clothing also.
Yeah. Steve Harvey.
I would never wear Steve Harvey's clothes.
Steve Harvey is worth talk about the ka-ching. He is now worth a lot of money.
No, he is the most successful African-American television personality
well, you know
in the
who
world
makes
right
a
now,
lot
probably.
Of money, apparently? Somebody was telling me at some event I was at recently, it wasn't an upfront, that Byron Allen, who does...
Our buddy Byron Allen from the Junkets.
If you're up at 1:30 in the morning in New York or 2 o'clock, he has a show called Comics Unleashed. And he
right.
used to have this thing called Entertainment Studios, which is basically repurposing Junkets that we all do and putting them on a
The Entertainer.
Smart.
The
smart.
Entertainers, it was called. Yeah. I think that's still running.
So he started out doing... what was that show he was on? He was on some...
Real People.
Yeah. So
on NBC, he was super young.
Peddling these shows, he buys the time on stations all around the country,
mm-hmm.
and then
that's what he does.
Buys
the time.
He buys the time, but sells commercials within that, and he has all these shows. And apparently, somebody at one of these meetings goes, "This guy's got more money than Denzel. It's unbelievable how much money this guy." That was the comment that was given. Apparently, Byron Allen is making a fortune.
Can that possibly be true?
I don't know.
In late night syndicated television for
well, let's say with him recently about a lawsuit, he was suing. Like a celebrity or something like that?
Over something that happened in an interview? No, I don't know about that.
Something.
Byron, if you're listening, please.
I don't
hack
know,
this podcast.
But apparently, he's doing very, very well. You know, and maybe, so Bill and I, maybe we'll go around the country and buy time on hundreds of stations and sell the advertising for talk.
You know what's funny if you watch Comics Unleashed is it's completely undated. You're not allowed to do topical jokes of any kind if
well,
you actually
if you
watch
actually
it.
Go to the
and
info.
He comes out and does like a like there was a survey the other day about gold being like it's like something you would it has completely undated. He'll do two monologue jokes. He sits down and then all those comics who you've seen there's some that are dead now are
well,
on the show.
Some of those episodes are like you know if you press the info button on your remote control, it tells you the date that the episode premiered.
Yeah.
And yeah, I see 07, you know, and like Bill said,
1807. The summer in black and white.
Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
Wells,
and while we're sitting
so
here.
Speaking about Wells Fargo, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
No, but seriously, we got some breaking news here on Twitter, on my Twitter feed. Billy Crudup joins Cate Blanchett, Kristen Wiig, and Richard Linklater's Where'd You Go? Netflix lands a sci-fi novel with Ridley Scott. Training Day has been canceled by CBS.
I heard that was a good show. I never saw the CBS Training Day.
Bill Paxton died.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It was.
Hey,
it was
there was some other television news this week too, which we were talking about the upfronts earlier, and we mentioned Kimmel. Kimmel's going to do the Oscars again.
That's right.
And I wanted to mention also the
he
fact
was great
that
last year I really
he was a solid B plus A minus.
Yeah, I was going to say
they're going to get rid of some of the deadwood that he's not going to do another bus idea.
No,
when they bring a big idea to him,
well, you know, the big ending of that show before they screwed up with Moonlight and La La Land is he was going to be sitting with Matt Damon in the audience. There was a whole like comedy piece that they did there, but
they went
once that debacle
much,
happened,
yeah.
they
scratched it.
Plus, you know, if you don't watch the Jimmy Kimmel show, this fake feud between him and Jimmy Kimmel and Matt Damon,
it
really wouldn't make
you?
Any sense
it
to you.
It just seems rude, like really rude. Like, how does Matt Damon put up with that? I know that everybody's supposed to be on the joke in terms of the audience, but if you're new to it,
well,
it
and internationally,
cruel.
Internationally, it doesn't. Yeah, oh, it sounds cruel.
It sounds
you don't
cruel.
Know.
He's
yeah.
always
in France.
On
they're
him.
Like, why are they so mean to him?
You know, Bill.
Well, wait. I want to also say that Kimmel and Justin Theroux have just sold a show this week. Kimmel normally comes and is the highlight of the upfronts that you were talking about earlier because he turns it into a roast. And it's very, very funny. It's like the hottest ticket that week. So he and Justin Theroux came up with this idea while they were in Mexico on vacation where they're going to buy the scripts from 60s and 70s and 80s sitcoms, and they're going to have present-day actors and actresses read them live. So it's going to be a live television show on ABC, probably a Friday night thing.
Just like Mean Tweets, but with scripts.
So they're going to take, like, Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell, and they're going to do different strokes. Kevin Hart will read the part of
You know, this
Arnold.
Idea originally, at a place called Top of the Gate, which was on top of the old Village Gate in Manhattan, many, many years ago, I saw something called The Real Brady Bunch. And what they did was they took Brady Bunch scripts verbatim, and they had actors just read the scripts, and with different, they did not change one word of dialogue, but with different inflections in the dialogue, it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. For example, Alice the housekeeper on the Brady Bunch. Uh-huh. The episode was that she was, I don't know, for some reason she was scared that somebody was going to break into the house or something like that. So she was keeping a baseball, Mr. Brady, Robert Reed, I believe was the actor, told her to keep, she'll feel better if she keeps a baseball bat under her bed, you know? And I think the line was something, well, this will really come in handy, Mr. Brady. I could really use this and it'll make me feel better, you know? But if you read that in a different way of like, oh, this will come. And I think they even had a baseball bat prop that they used and she's looking at it with the innuendo. But the entire script with a different read on it, but not changing verbatim, you know,
just
took on this. And even when it wasn't that kind of innuendo, it just became just ludicrous. So that is a great idea. And
it should be huge. It strikes me as a one joke idea that will have to have a lot of celebrities going. But
Davy Jones,
you told me lip sync battle was going to be a hit, I would have never believed it. And now
karaoke,
all these or carpool karaoke. Now all these famous people are flocking
Davy
to
Jones,
do it.
Who was in an episode of the Brady Bunch.
Rest
showed up to when they did that script on that off-Broadway show.
That's great.
With Davy Jones.
Funny.
Davy Jones showed up and actually did started
great.
Reading it.
That's
so
great.
So you could do this. I mean, it having seen this, what you're describing, Bill, sounds very, very
promising.
I think it'll be good.
Yeah. Well, is it green-lighted or is it just
no?
Gonna
it's
pilot?
Done.
But how does Justin Theroux fit in this?
People don't know he's a funny guy. People
he's
don't
very
know
funny.
He's
funny. You know that movie with Jennifer Aniston, his wife, where with Paul Rudd, where Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd are married.
Wanderlust.
And they decide to live like on a hippie commune.
Right.
And Justin Theroux has been there for he's like this guy
because he wrote Zoolander 2. Well, Zoolander 2 is
not
a good
example. He's been on this forever, and he looks at them and he goes, and it's so because he doesn't know modern technology because they're away from civilization, away from society, away from any modern technology. And he's like, oh, you with your fancy floppy disks and those big VHS cassettes, like it was this old.
I'm laughing more at Neil's face just reading
very,
those
very
lines.
He wrote Tropic Thunder. You liked the movie Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder was okay.
So, I mean, he's got a reputation as being a funny script doctor and script writer.
Right. So there's a bunch of movies coming on demand that you're looking forward to, Bill, that you had mentioned.
First of all, you talked about La La Land earlier. Like, finally, that's made it on demand. And there's a couple of cool
City
other...
City of Dreams.
I was a big fan.
I can't
I love La La Land.
But...
The... I'm looking forward to, as we mentioned earlier, not on demand, I'm looking forward to Blade Runner 2049. I'm also really looking forward to the trip to Spain with Coogan and Bryden again, who did the trip to England. Trip to Italy is up there. I'm really looking forward to the new Baywatch movie, said no one ever. Actually,
I am too.
Speaking about the Brady Bunch, yeah. Back to that.
Here's a story.
When they did the Brady Bunch movie with Shelley Long and Ben Stiller's wife played Marcia.
Christine Taylor.
Right. Right. It was just like that show I was
and
telling
Gary,
you about.
And who was the guy that does the
Gary
incredible...
Cole.
Gary Coltis is
Cole.
Unbelievable.
And it was a complete
Mike.
Goof on the Brady Bunch.
I remember that
so
parody.
So this
yeah.
Baywatch thing is not going to be played straight up like the
It's going to be an
series.
Action comedy.
It's going to be a comedy, and I think they're...
An action comedy.
Right, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson is in it, and it's who's now...
And there's going to be cameos by Pamela Anderson and Michael... Hasselhoff?
David Hasselhoff.
The Hoff, yeah.
Yeah, The Hoff. And Zac Efron, which is, by the way, to me, still is one of the rising stars in the comedy field in Hollywood.
He's very gifted comedically.
He's funny,
I'm stunned.
God.
Bill Bregoli, don't you find that to be true?
Go ahead, hit me with it. What's the matter with you guys? What's the matter? You didn't mention Alexandra just... Desario.
Oh my gosh, she's gorgeous.
Yeah. Now that's the reason I'm going to see the movie.
She is gorgeous.
Bill, what are you looking forward to the most this summer? Seriously.
I think I told you last week I'm looking forward to The Little Hours.
Which... Yeah, the nun thing. Have you seen that?
Oh, is that with that all-star cast?
It's small.
No, it's Aubrey Plaza.
Dave
Franco.
You know all of them.
It's really offensive. Apparently, it's like they even use it in the quote line, but the Catholic Church is the most offensive thing of it. I mean, it's three nuns that decide to... how would you describe it? Nuns?
It's just a raunchy nun movie from the middle.
And I'm also looking forward to the raunchy World War II movie...
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
I want to see Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron. I want to see Detroit, the Catherine Bigelow film about the 67 riots there. And other than that, you know, everything's kind of...
I want to see The Mummy.
A lot of...
I'm excited.
You do?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You think... Ugh, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. You think that's going to...
Tom Cruise?
It's going to do gangbusters because it's a reinvention. Everybody no longer liked the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies. It had run its course.
What happened to Brendan Fraser? You know how when you're on...
He's your doorman. You didn't see him in the building?
Do you know when you're on the...
He let me up here today.
When you're finished reading the article, whatever you're reading on
clickbait stuff.
And at the bottom it says, like, 10 most forgotten child stars. So there's one, you know, or 8 makeup tips. It says, why no one will hire Brendan Fraser anymore. And I never clicked on it, but
I don't know what demons he's battling, but the last time we talked to him was at the Hamptons Film Festival like 3 or 4 years ago, if you recall. An individual. He'd been drinking. I mean, I'm not going out on a limb here, and I know he's been battling some problems, so I don't know. I feel badly, but I think he, in terms of, I think he has a lot of money put away because he made a
Wait,
ton of
Wait a few years
dough.
From now, Quentin Tarantino will put him in a movie and save his career.
Quentin Tarantino will rediscover
revive his career.
So next week, we're going to talk about...
Can we go to a movie and see a movie?
Let's talk about Baywatch.
Okay, we're going to go see Baywatch.
And what's the other big movie next week?
Oh, I'm seeing that Grateful
Pirates.
Dead movie
Pirates
tomorrow. Are you guys seeing that?
The long trip?
The long unusual story or the long story? Four and a half hour.
And Lisa Rossman.
No, put me right
Lisa Rossman will be with us. Our talking picture
yes.
gang will be
There's
here
also
next
two
week.
Good movies coming out next week as well. Drone.
I don't know about Drone.
Drone is with the guy from Game of Thrones. He was one of the patriarch Stark. Can't remember his name.
Bean.
Sean Bean.
Sean Bean.
Yeah. And then there's the Buena Vista Social Club documentary, Adios.
Oh, Adios, Buena Vista Social
Club. And basically, it's just the living members of Buena Vista Social Club. So for anyone who loves
So Buena it's a one-man movie? No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So that should be also interesting.
Does anybody have any interest in seeing the... First of all, I said this is the fifth... It was the fifth Alien film, right?
I don't know.
It's the fifth one. Fifth.
Right, and it's also the fifth Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Mm-hmm. Now, after the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which was okay, you know, I was completely lost. lost plot-wise in some of these, like the Black Pearl or whatever. You know, I have no interest, I mean, other than having to see it as a critic, I have no interest in seeing this. Do you think that the, how do you think it'll do, and do you, and we'll talk about it next week after we've seen it, but how do you think it'll do, and do you think that the audience is still interested in
every
seeing
every single movie? Every Pirates of the Caribbean movie that has come out has made over $1 billion. It is one of the most successful franchises in
have
the history.
Have they grown,
of
though, or have they started to wane a little? Did
oh,
they
okay,
come
so
off?
They waned $100,000.
Is Gore Verbinski directing this one?
No,
as well?
He's not.
No, he's not.
It's a couple of guys who made a movie about, what was it, the Kon-Tiki movie or something? It's like guys from Norway or something.
Oh, yeah. Those guys?
Yeah.
About the. We met them at a Peggy Siegel thing. Yeah. They did that, the. The guy that goes across the on a not yeah. an inner tube but like on a raft
well,
they
yeah, well, the
they catch
the these guys
what was that guy was
water.
Just called Kon-Tiki.
Basically, they were hired
yeah,
because they knew that they yeah. could handle water. I mean, oh, water stuff when you're making a movie.
Is Gore Verbinski a producer on?
I don't think he's anything. To do.
No, you're worried about he. He's with that. Brendan Fraser. They're they're bus boys at an IHOP right now.
I saw him a few months ago.
The last few of them were you kind of lost in the story?
I've been lost since part two. You know, it's all become stunt casting.
These people. Look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a license to print money.
They love the Johnny Depp character of Jack Sparrow.
I think it's just about, well, this is, and this is a whole other discussion we'll have another time, but it goes back to the fact that, you know, Hollywood, a lot of these big budget movies are mainly about special effects and, you know, explosions and action set pieces. And in this particular case, also add Johnny Depp in that character. But, you know, spend a couple of money, spend some more money on making a coherent script so at least I could get involved. And in,
well, they've
and
been selling
be
it pretty
what
well.
You, what you're telling
Johnny
you're
Depp was in Orlando at the Disneyland, and you know
Disney
they
World.
Have a you know Disney World, and you know they have Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Well, it's
ride.
That's how it started. It,
so
it was
he,
originally a ride and yeah. became a movie franchise.
And so what happened? He was in there as the real life Jack Sparrow, and he surprised everybody that was coming
I heard
in.
That.
It was great. I thought it was a great way to kind of reform his very watered down brand at the moment, and he's been promoting it quite well.
One of the nice things about this one, if you go to see it, is that there's a chance you'll see Amber Heard there, because as the money is being counted, she gets to take half of it. So
go.
Look for that at your local multiplex.
So next week we will discuss Pirates of the Caribbean, we will discuss Baywatch, which I'm actually looking forward to.
Me too.
And Lisa Rossman will be here. So for Bill Bregoli,
hi there,
Bill McCuddy.
We watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
Jack Rico.
Hello.
At
showbizcafe.com.
Showbizcafe.com.
The food is great there. Go
and
there. I love
Bill
it.
Bill Rosen.
Great coffee.
We'll join you next week. Thanks for sitting around talking movies. And what do we do here every week, Bill? What's your catchphrase?
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to, which I just said 30 seconds ago.
Okay,
if you're
you
playing the drinking game again this week, you get another shot. Oh, my God.
We'll catch you next week. Thanks.